Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, the podcast where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm here with my two friends, Ant and Anna.
Hello.
Don't think we don't notice you going off script.
Yeah, I'm very nervous. I'm clenching everything.
I'm doing okay so far.
One word deviance is one word too far.
This week we are covering the year 1712.
Yep.
Yep.
And I would like 3-word previews from both of you, please. Ant.
Yar me mateys.
Yar me mateys.
Yar me. I wonder what that's about.
And Anna.
Wit and morality.
Oh, classic. Ooh. Anna.
I'm just going to lecture you both on areas of your moral failings.
Oh, sounds good. Yeah. Puritanical Anna.
Yep.
And my three are damn famous grandchild.
Damn famous grandchild.
Damn famous grandchild. Great.
And with no further ado, here we go.
We could have done with a little more ado. <Yeah. laughs>
Okay, so this week I'm going to talk about Ludwig van Beethoven.
Ah.
But
what? Okay.
Not that Ludwig van Beethoven.
Just some guy.
Because the year in question this week, 1712, was the year when the famous Beethoven's grandfather was born. And he was also called Ludwig, and he was also in the music business.
All right.
But he had a damn famous grandchild.
He sure did.
Who outshone him. Yeah, he made the mistake of having a grandchild who was a total genius and was far more famous. And so this segment is dedicated to him.
This is why I'm going to refuse my grandchildren any education. Yeah. So they can't outshine me.
Learn from Ludwig von Beethoven. No, not that one's mistakes.
And following this podcast episode, we can now consider his memory preserved for all eternity.
Yes.
Such as
And we can make a vow here and now never to talk about the damn famous grandchild.
The damn famous grandchild.
I will make that vow. Okay, so here we go. The other Ludwig von Beethoven. Here is your moment in the sun. Okay, so Beethoven's loser grandfather was born on January the 5th, 1712, and went on to become a professional singer and music director.
Oh.
And a funny thing about the loser grandfather, just to confuse things even more, is that in addition to sometimes being confused with his grandson, there were, in fact, two Ludwig von Beethovens born in 1712.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
What?
One in Mechelen in modern-day Belgium and the other in Antwerp. And it's not certain at all which of these two Ludwigs actually then went on to settle in Bonn in 1733, who we know was the guy who was actually the grandfather.
Yeah.
And it's not really helped by the fact that the first biographer of the composer, the proper famous Beethoven, made absolutely zero attempt to trace any of the genealogy beyond the grandfather.
The Ludwig. Loser grandfather.
Yeah, the loser grandfather. And so the Ludwig von Beethoven from Mechelen is generally assumed to be the grandfather.
Okay.
But it's basically, as far as I can tell, it's really just because it kind of suits everyone to pick one of them and go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
okay,
so this is the one everyone's gone
that
with.
That is amazing.
And there's really no evidence to suggest whether it was one or the other. Anyway, so... he was the second son. This is the story of the one from Mechelen,
okay.
Because it suits everyone to say that it was this one. So he was the second son of a master baker.
Mm-hmm.
From Mechelen.
You're
Michael.
A master baker, aren't you?
I am.
You master bake a lot.
Called Michael von Beethoven. And his dad, Michael von Beethoven, besides being in the bakery trade,
yep.
also participated in the local real estate market.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he also traded in antique furniture and paintings.
Oh.
And we're nearing the end now of the biography. just the age of six, Ludwig von Beethoven's loser grandfather was described as having a beautiful voice.
Okay.
And so he was granted admission to the choir boys seminar of the local cathedral,
mm-hmm.
effectively becoming a choir boy, yep. basically. When he was about five or six. And then we'll jump forward now a bit. So 1725, he then began his studies under the chief organist of another cathedral. And then we've got no records what happened until 1727.
Good.
And then basically he bounces around some different choirs. So that's his amazing, incredible life story. So what a journey, huh?
This is I'm riveted.
What a journey.
So good.
I would say this is the shallowest depth we've achieved in terms of a life story.
But we've got it. Someone somewhere has to tell the story of this guy.
I know, and I love that it's you.
So he died from a stroke in 1773 in Bonn, leaving a bunch of debts to his son. And that is the end
wow.
of someone who has a 50% chance of being Beethoven's grandfather.
You heard it here first.
Well, at least it was mercifully short.
Yeah. What was the loser grandfather's son named?
Jay, began with J.
Good.
J. Beethoven.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, good. Yeah.
Yep.
Any further questions? There?
It's where Mr. Z got his inspiration for his name from.
That's right.
Oh, nice. I don't have any questions. I think you've...
I mean, I've really covered it,
haven't I? You've covered it in astonishing amount of detail.
What did he bake? What kind of things would he bake?
The master baker?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He baked mostly gingerbread. Gingerbread... Women,
gingerbread women. Progressive. Very progressive.
Very progressive. He was.
It's very hard to gender a gingerbread person, right?
Yeah.
And yet we've been doing it for a long time as a society. Yeah.
I'm glad we're shining a light on this at last.
Exactly. Yeah. Finally, we're holding a mirror up to the gingerbread
people.
Women. Yeah. And also entire gingerbread castles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Good.
Defended by gingerbread
Moats?
Women soldiers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Incredibly progressive.
Yeah, all right. Okay, moving on.
I can't believe there's not been more written about him. Yeah, for somebody who is so ahead of his time on gender roles.
Oh, we need to take this out the back and shoot it, right? Okay. Right, for my turn, hang on to your hats.
I'm talking about Mozart's loser uncle.
Not quite, but there is dubious accounts of history ahoy. We're going to talk about a very famous man, perhaps the most famous man in his oeuvre.
Okay.
This is, of course, Blackbeard
the
Pirate.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Hence, Yarmy Mateys.
Yes.
Blackbeard, right, whose real name was Edward Teach or Thatch, was a notorious English pirate who operated during the early 18th century. While we don't know too much about his early life, it's kind of shrouded in mystery. It's believed he was born about 1680-ish in Bristol in England.
Oh, were there actually two Blackbeards? And we're assuming that the pirate...
Well, there might be. We'll come on to that.
Oh.
So from being from Bristol, he probably has a Bristolian accent, which I won't do. unfortunately, but I do suggest to the listeners who don't know what it is to look it up on YouTube. It's quite a treat, and I don't think it's that menacing an accent, really.
Okay.
But I think kind of like hobbitish-ish, kind of esque. But, you know, it's a lovely accent. I'm not poo-pooing it, but just as as a dread pirate.
It's like you're not going to be threatened by Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Blackbeard, he began his seafaring career as a privateer, so working for the forces of good, during the War of Spanish Succession. And after the war, though, he transitioned to just outright plain regular old piracy.
It's interesting how people often reach a point in their life and do transition to evil, isn't it?
You know, when did you reach your point?
For some people, it's earlier than others.
Yeah. You've really bloomed. So he associated himself with other infamous pirates at the time. There's like a motley crew of them. And he became a crew on their various pirate ships, learning the trade. One significant association was when he was taken under the wing and apprenticed to the dread pirate Benjamin Hornigold. That was his name. He wasn't less than he liked gold a lot. but he went on to give Blackbeard command of his own ship, and he had his own crew. And then Blackbeard's reputation grew and grew as he developed his fearsome image. He had this thick black beard, and during battle, what he would do is he put slow burning fuses in them and light them so it would smoke and spark in his beard.
That is cool and dangerous.
Yes, it was terrifying, and it was really against any of the best practices of health and safety in the workplace, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But he wasn't just a swashbuckling ne'er-do-well. He also had a softer side. He allegedly had multiple wives.
Yay!
Or consorts, or pressed women. Apparently marrying a woman named Mary Ormond is the one that we do know about.
Okay.
Who was his 14th wife. And Blackbeard, offered her as a gift to the crew. So
that I like less.
Yes, but it's also important to note here that there was a lot of news traveling by letters. There was a lot of propaganda. You know, a lot of these things written about pirates were probably not true.
Okay.
Just to drum up like this anti-pirate sentiment.
They're slandering
him. Completely slandering his good name. So he probably just had one wife and was very faithful and loyal and just a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet that's right.
Definitely.
History has shown us that most men make good choices.
You're pro-Blackbeard, right?
I'm pretty pro-Blackbeard, I think, at this rate. As such, there are accounts of Blackbeard's pirate career marked with plundering, intimidation, and just these audacious acts of dashing, piracy. just regular piracy stuff.
Yeah, just bog standard pirate.
He was downloading DVDs, the rest of it.
You wouldn't steal a car.
He roamed the waters of the West Indies and the eastern coast of the American colonies, targeted merchant ships, and spreading fear amongst the victims. And it could be the case that just many of these things were not related and just all associated to him as well. So maybe he wasn't as prolific as they say he was. He's just a good person to pin them on. But there's so many myths surrounding this guy, it's hard to sort of pick these apart. Some of the ones I'll go into, for example, Blackbeard's buried treasure. He didn't bury treasure.
Aww.
Pirates, as a general rule, didn't bury treasure. It was a bad thing to do with treasure. You would just sail away
and then spend it. And yeah.
There was no like, where did you get this money? It's like, ooh, nice gold.
Yeah,
please come
I'll
in.
Take it. Yeah. Here.
But buy more
my good
beard
or
oil.
Service.
So where's the bell buried treasure thing? Is that just like a recent?
It's from Treasure Island, is what it's from. It's from the book, yeah. So that's basically the whole backing there. So another tidbit of information, you can look up Blackbeard's flag, which is a black background, a white skeleton with a trident poking a red heart. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool, but it wasn't his flag.
No.
It just dates back to 1912, we think. And we don't really have any idea what the flag he flew really was. Some suggest it was just a plain red flag. Others suggest it was the classic black flag or a black flag with a skull on it. But we don't really know. It definitely wasn't that really cool one with the pokey heart one. Anyway,
everything is feeling so debunked.
Yes, it is. So 1712, the height of his power, he was really just giving it what for. But one of the most notable incidents was actually his downfall. Blackbeard in 1718 was aboard his ship Queen Anne's Revenge, which was originally a French slave ship named La Concorde. But Blackbeard captured it and renamed it to be his flagship. Queen Anne's Revenge was this large frigate armed with 40 guns. It was this formidable vessel. It was big, it was fast, it was powerful, and it terrorized the seas. There's basically nothing it couldn't catch and nothing it couldn't defeat. Now, it's important to note that there was a small little flotilla of like ships. It wasn't just the one-on-one. It was, oftentimes a lot of them working
like
in concert.
Like a little pirate navy.
Yeah, exactly. So in November 1718, Lieutenant Robert Maynard, a British naval officer stationed in Virginia, was assigned the task of capturing or killing Blackbeard.
Ooh.
Now, Maynard had prior experience in naval operations against pirates, and he had gained a reputation as being a bit of a pirate slayer.
Okay, sidebar. That's a very cool nickname.
Pretty cool. His intense pursuit stemmed from just the notoriety of Blackbeard, and like he was an amazing scalp to have, and he was threatening British shipping and the colonial trade, and he was just this figurehead that they needed to get rid of.
Yeah.
So he was just determined to bring this guy to justice, this symbol of rebellion and lawlessness against the British Navy and against the Crown.
When you do the mix of this episode, can you put in the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack?
I don't think we can afford that.
Ah, dang it. What if I hum it?
I could compose a pirate-ish tune.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's a decisive battle in Ocracoke Island, or just off it.
Ocracoke.
Yeah. Is that in North Carolina? Mm-hmm. Maynard and his small contingent of men engage Blackbeard and his crew. So there's three ships involved in this. Maynard's being the,
flagship?
His flagship, which was called
Pirate Slayer.
Oh, the Napster.
The Napster.
It's called the HMS Ranger. Ranger.
Securities and Exchange Commission.
So Maynard in Ranger, he engaged...
Ranger is a little disappointing as a name for this legendary pirate
slayer. It's a bit generic, isn't it?
I wanted it to be like...
Beard keepy floaty boat.
Yeah, like... Yeah.
The place you keep
Nothing. I've got nothing, but I think Ranger is lame.
I think it's a cool name. Anyway, so they were outnumbered. The Royal Navy were outnumbered, and at this stage they were engaged in gunfire and cannon fire. And
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Unfortunately, the Maynard's ship, the Ranger, was sort of disabled while the other two ships were way off in the distance and couldn't engage. Mm. And so Blackbeard came alongside. And Blackbeard then boarded, but due to Maynard's excellent fighting skills and his soldiers, they actually managed to repel Blackbeard and defeated him on board their own ship.
Oh, wow.
Just in time for the two Royal Navy ships to come alongside. And like, oh, we did it.
Yeah, good. All of us. Good job.
So, and apparently he sustained multiple gunshot wounds and sword blows before finally succumbing to the attack.
Yeah, you can't really come back from that.
Or maybe he didn't. Like, a lot of this is not known. So, because what happened was after this, the reports came back by letters. Various people wrote letters and it took some time to come back to the UK and were published in sometimes, I think, in April. And there are slightly different accounts. Some say he was beheaded and hung in front of the Maynard ship. Some say he was brought to shore and hanged. I have actually an excerpt here from the Boston Newsletter.
I thought you had called in an expert. I was like, that's excerpt. Way more effort than we deserve.
So about the retelling of the event, and I can tell it to you, and it's quite nice. I like it. Teach called to Lieutenant Maynard and told him he was for King George, desiring him to hoist out his boat and come aboard. Maynard replied that he designed to come aboard with his sloop as soon as he could. And Teach, understanding his design, told him that he wanted him to let him alone. He would not meddle with him then. Maynard answered that it was him he wanted and that he would have him dead or alive, else it would cost him his life. Whereupon Teach called for a glass of wine and swore damnation to himself if either took or gave quarter.
That's pretty good.
So
it's also funny just to think about these two dudes shouting at each other from the decks of their ships.
Yeah.
Like, you shall not come aboard. I shall come aboard. No, you shall not come aboard.
Yeah. I'm assuming that they're shooting at each other at this point.
Probably. Yeah, but this goes to show. Like,
I'm trying to. So hang on. So Maynard's ship's been disabled. This Teach comes alongside. He starts to say all this stuff to him.
I think it's before the fighting happened, where he's like, for King George, you don't need to come aboard. Do come aboard and we'll be mates.
Yeah.
When he's going to stabby him. So gotcha. I think there's a little bit of back and forth, whatever.
Nice.
But it just goes to show the sort of the, you know, exuberance of writing about this is a dashing, daring adventure. And so really hamming up the prose and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Did any of it happen in that way? It was probably quite a bloody and tragic sort of coming together.
Yeah.
History
man. Exactly. One of the fascinating tales from this, Maynard spared the life of one of the pirates who was actually there as a trader, just coming along to say hi to his mate.
Oh, okay.
Because Blackbeard apparently had a plot to blow up the ship if they were overpowered. And so this pirate actually wrestled the flame from the would-be arsonist as he was on his route to the magazine, and so was spared. I've got another excerpt from another paper about the actual battle itself, the hand-to-hand combat, which is really good.
Okay.
Maynard and Teach themselves too begun the fight with their swords. Maynard making a thrust, the point of his sword against Teach's cartridge box and bending it to the hilt. Teach broke the guard of it and wounded Maynard's finger, but did not disable him. Whereupon he jumped back and threw away his sword and fired his pistol, which wounded Teach. Demelt, whoever that is.
That guy, oh yeah.
Struck in between them with his sword and cut Teach's face pretty much. Yep, says pretty much.
Okay.
Also, like, I mean, why did you... If I was going to go and attack someone with a sword... I would use the pistol first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like he starts the sword fight, then he's like, oh yeah, I've got a pistol in my pocket.
Yeah. I should just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but then he cut my face pretty much, so.
There's a really good quote here for the next bit. One of Maynard's men, being a Scottish Highlander, engaged Teach with his broadsword, who gave Teach a cut on the neck. Teach then said, well done, lad. The Highlander replied, if it be not well done, I'll do it better. And with that, he gave him a second stroke, which cut off his head, laying it flat on his shoulder.
Wow.
Yeah. I reckon that didn't happen.
Yeah, probably not. No, probably not.
because it's a bit too pithy, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, if you don't think I've done it well enough, try this on for size.
No, like, in the heat of the moment, it's like, I know you are, but what am I?
Everybody in this era is pithy. That's their whole thing.
Yeah.
As you'll see in my bit, it's just pith all over
the
place.
You're watching a lot too much Bridgerton or something, I go.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Anyway... Maynard's successful mission against Blackbeard brought him a little bit of recognition and sort of his place in history, but not necessarily at the time. We'll come into that in a second. Blackbeard's head was put on a spike by the Virginian governor in a place now known as Blackbeard's Point. And apparently the skull was subsequently turned into a silver punch bowl, but that's been lost to time.
God.
Maynard, sadly, did not get compensated or even paid for this victory whatsoever.
Wow.
Because he disputed the prize money should be split with the other ships that were like just basically not involved in the battle.
Yeah.
They didn't fight, they didn't lose people, etc.
Yeah.
And he also was accused by those two ships of plundering some of the booty before they got there and pocketing about £90. So the prize money was about £400, so a lot of money in the days, and they apparently just siphoned off £90 before the ships got there.
Know.
So therefore, he actually didn't do very well in his career. He was eventually promoted to commander in 1739, 21 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. And the captain the next year, just by due course. But then he died in relative obscurity in Kent at the age of 66. Last thing to note, the HMS Ranger is still a ship, not the same ship.
Oh, I was like, wow. That's...
But it's an Archer class patrol and training vessel.
Okay.
Based in Portsmouth, whose crew still celebrate the defeat of Blackbeard every 22nd of November. Probably very sober event.
Yeah, a sort of solemn memorial to Maynard.
There you go. That is the story of Blackbeard and the golden age of piracy.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So cool.
Right. I am talking today about some characterful men of letters and the shenanigans they got up to. And I love this time period because it just feels like the quintessential sort of English arts and letters era. Men in powdered wigs sitting in coffee shops talking about, you know, making witty commentary on society. And I find it all wonderful because I aspire to have that kind of life where I'm just... called upon for my bon mot, and then I can go back to doing nothing.
We can powder your wig for you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it sort of is my life right now, but I very rarely wear a powdered wig.
It's too hot.
Too hot. Way too hot. So anyway, the two men in question today are named Sir Richard Steele and Joseph Addison. And in 1711, they founded a newspaper called The Spectator, which is not the same as The Spectator that exists today and is like a very conservative paper. Yep. But that Spectator did take its name from this original publication. And as an aside, Steele and Addison also started journals called Tatler and The Guardian. So all of their journals had their names poached.
I've heard of Sir Richard Steele.
Yeah, well, there's a pub called the Sir Richard Steele.
We have been to the Sir Richard Steele. That's why.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, meet me at Sir Richard Steele. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not a historical context. It's a drinking context.
Exactly.
Okay, good.
Which, you know, when it comes to me, is probably the case. so he was Richard Steele. Sir Richard Steele was famous enough to get a pub named after him, which is great. But The Spectator was a highly influential periodical that shaped British literary and cultural history. Mm. It ran for 555 issues, with the final one released in December 1712. So they were really churning them out. And it had lots of essays and social commentary on politics, literature, society, fashion, and morality. It was very witty and satirical. And in its own words, The Spectator's aim was to enliven morality with wit and to temper wit with morality.
Oh, such a good, witty 1712.
It's just so 1712.
Yeah.
And the target audience notably was the middle class, which at this point in England was just starting to be a thing.
Yeah, there's like two of them.
Yeah, exactly. They're like two guys who weren't aristocrats.
Two guys with an Argo.
Yeah, two guys shopping at Waitrose. So it was on the rise. And the Spectator wanted to promote moral improvement, refine manners, and provide intellectual entertainment. Mm. So basically a bunch of toffs trying to teach us middle class slum how to live our lives. And Steele and Addison invented characters as their pseudonyms, and the characters would then write the essays in the journal. And one of the characters was the very creatively named Mr. Spectator, who wrote, "He hopes it will be said he has brought philosophy out of closets and libraries, schools and colleges, to dwell in clubs and assemblies, at tea tables and coffee houses."
That's quite pretentious.
I know, it really is. And it's like the kind of thing, so I went and I found some copies of it online, and it's the kind of thing where a bunch of words are capitalized and you can't really decide why. And it just feels very like, how wonderful. And another one of the characters was named Sir Roger de Coverley, who I genuinely think is the template upon which Will has based his life. So Sir Roger is depicted as an elderly, kind-hearted, and somewhat eccentric country gentleman. Sir Roger was known for traditional values, benevolence, and adherence to old-fashioned customs, and he's depicted as a man of honor and integrity, often expressing a desire to maintain order and tradition.
I see.
Yeah?
Which of those things do you think is the same?
Elderly.
all but benevolence, I would say. Finally, Sir Roger was portrayed as being out of touch with certain aspects of modern life, which led to amusing and humorous situations. The paper had a real influence on the development of the essay as a literary form, and it also had a focus on promoting women's writing. Mm. In Mr. Spectator's words, they wanted to increase the number of women who were of a more elevated life and conversation. It was also hugely popular in the colonies. James Madison, who would go on to be the fourth president of the U.S., read it avidly as a teenager. And Benjamin Franklin was also a reader, and he kind of aped the style later when he wrote his Silence Do Good letters, which are real page turners. So just to close it out, I have a couple of fun facts about Addison and Steele. So Sir Richard Steele was married to a woman named Margaret Stretch, but she died just 1 year into the marriage, sadly. But at her funeral, Sir Richard met the woman who would become his next wife.
Wow.
Which is a real sort of... I don't know.
That's intense, man.
It's intense.
Hang on, who attended the funeral he hadn't met before?
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, maybe he invited her intentionally.
Oh, I see.
It said he met her there. So I guess maybe she was a friend.
First date at a funeral
friend. Yeah, it's tough. It's hard to pull off. But anyway, good for him. Eventually, he moved to Wales and died there. And in the year 2000, when they were restoring the church where he was buried, they found his skull in a lead casket.
Okay. Sorry, I was going to say not much has changed, but we live underwater. But never mind.
Yeah, that's right. And Joseph Addison's father was named Lancelot Addison, which is awesome. And in 1712, Addison wrote his most famous play, which was called Cato, and was a huge favorite of George Washington, who apparently staged it for the troops at Valley Forge during the Revolutionary War. And lots of people think some of the most famous lines in American Revolutionary history derive from the play, like, give me liberty or give me death, could have come from a line in the play, it is not now time to talk of aught, but change or chains or conquest, liberty or death. As well as, I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country, which is a pretty good line that was maybe totally cribbed from this play.
Yeah.
Addison's personal life was less successful. Quote, his wife was arrogant and imperious. His stepson was an unfriendly rake. And there's an apocryphal story that when Addison was on his deathbed, he sent for his wastrel stepson to witness how a Christian man meets death.
Wow.
Which is intense.
How does a Christian man meet death?
I guess peacefully and prayerfully.
Oh, okay.
And probably wittily.
Yeah, probably wittily.
Given these guys' sort of general vibe. So anyway, that's just a brief little glance into the lovely world of social commentary and witticisms and powdered wigs and lovely things happening.
I don't know why, but I hate everyone in that story.
Yeah.
Something about it is just these are not my people.
I love them. They're my people.
Yeah, it's all I'm just preachy, not witty. It is a bit preachy. It's like, oh, we've come down from the heavens to give you philosophy.
Yeah, 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 towards,
you know, yeah, and you'll fucking take it.
I have only one philosophy. Buy more Beanie Babies.
Good. Well, I'm going to reinstate the Spectator, but not the weird conservative one. And I'm going to teach you all some morals. It's been too long.
No, thanks.
Pass. All right. Thank you for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1712 and the people that were in it and the shenanigans they got up to. And most importantly, Beethoven's loser grandfather.
Yes, and all that's left to do is pick the next year from the random number generator. So, Will, would you mind please doing the honours?
Absolutely. And as a reminder, we've set the random number generator to give us a year from, we've kindly requested a year from 1000 BC to 2000 CE.
Oh, look, my moral education is already wearing off. That was so polite.
And the year for the next episode is 1328.
Okay.
1328.
Vikings? Maybe?
Maybe? A little late for Vikings?
Monks?
Beethoven's loser eight great grandfather. I guess we'll find out.
I'm excited. See you then.
See you then.
Bye. Toodles!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.